there, fictional friends, and welcome to another episode of Fully Booked. I'm Megan.
And I'm Shireen.
And I'm Arthur.
Oh my god.
No, I go second, Arthur. You don't get to go second.
I forget how this works. That's why I was waiting. She's all mad. Shit.
That was such a weird pause. You were just like, do I say anything?
You're like, am I here? Am I Arthur? Who am I?
I could just be like, start randomly talking 10 minutes in.
That would be weird.
That would be really funny.
No.
Whatever.
Okay. I thought about trying to get Dan in on this episode as well. Because
we told him yesterday because he came to see the movie with us. So we had told him, he was like, should I be part of it? And we were like, yeah, be on the podcast. He's like, no, I don't have a radio voice. And he got all uncomfortable. And I was like, Dan, none of us have a radio voice.
You're no. Since you said that you sound like a mom from Minnesota, I'm like, oh, that's what it is.
I sound like the mom from Back to the Future. That's just
that's mine. It. Yeah. Marty.
Yeah, that's what I sound like. I sound like Leah Thompson in Back to the Future.
Nice. Great.
Oh, boy. Shocker of all shockers, we're talking about a new release today, which I think it would be impossible to skirt over. So we all went to see Project Hail Mary over the weekend.
Woo.
Hooray! And we're here to talk about it. And we brought Arthur with us to contribute to, one, his love of science fiction, two, his love of Andy Weir, and three, his excitement about this movie, like, as we were building up to it in general.
I read the book and everything, although it was a long time ago, but still.
Yeah.
I read The Martian from him. I got a couple of his older books. He has a new book coming out that apparently is going to be made into a movie already.
Yep.
Wow.
Everything he writes is a success.
And, they've done the pre-securing of rights. Well, they did. Okay. But it turns out they did that with Project Hail Mary. So the book was published in 2021. Mm-hmm. And what I was reading was that the announcement was made that there had been a partnership made and already the rights had been secured to the film in 2020. So it was the exact same situation.
Damn.
I think The Martian was so successful that now Andy Weir, every single book that he's publishing, they're like, okay, we're just gonna just grab that so we can make a little movie out of it. Well, Shireen and I have had this conversation about Hunger Games, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, that Sunrise on the Reaping was opted prior to the release of the book.
I think I heard about the movie before the book, you know. I was like, what is this movie?
And we were like, Hunger Games. Oh.
I'm like, oh shit, it's a book that hasn't even come out yet.
There's a new one coming out. You're like, oh, look at that. This is how I'm hearing the announcement that there's a new Hunger Games book on the way. Who knew?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So obviously this was like extremely highly anticipated.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. I was going to say I'm here to contribute because of my love of Ryan Gosling. That's
yeah, I know. It. That's okay. And you watched the movie.
I did.
Like, you're like, I don't know.
You also like rocks, right?
You like rocks. Yes.
Rock.
Oh boy. So yeah, we're here to talk about space stuff and the addition of a cute little rock alien who I don't want to treat as a pet because he doesn't deserve to be, but I want one.
I know. I kept thinking that the whole time I was watching the movie. I'm like, pet? No, not a pet.
No, too not. Smart. Way too fucking smart. Also, that would just be mean and condescending.
When I told you about this, I said it's a rock alien that is a spider.
Yeah.
And you were freaking out. And you were like, no, thank you. It's a rock spider.
I know, but it's so cute.
Oh,
they did a good job for the movie.
Yeah, but also, but even in the book. Okay, yeah. So I mentioned this in the last episode, but I had decided at the beginning of the month that since this was like such a massive release, I wanted to kind of have more context for it. So I decided to listen to the audiobook. I'm in the middle of a bunch of ARCs and I was like, well, I don't have time to physically read the book. But when I'm commuting to work and when I'm doing stuff, I can listen to it. No problem. So I did. And I loved it. It was so wonderful. And the relationship between the two of them is really like the heart of that novel. And I loved it. So that was like a really fun experience. Also, it's just a really good, really good audiobook.
Mm. Yeah, I had big plans to listen to the audiobook, or at least even try and get through half of it.
Sure.
I went on Spotify, found Project Hail Mary on Spotify Premium, listened to it for 10 minutes, wondering why it sounded so odd. I was like, maybe it's some sort of space language that they're using, like to try and fully immerse the reader. Realized it was in German.
What?
And then I just
German.
And then because they kept saying words in English here and there because it was like Project
it's
Hail
German.
Mary, and it was like the intro or whatever. Anyway, so I then tried to find it in English on Spotify and it was nowhere to be found. Not even like for like money or whatever. So I'm like, fuck it. I guess I'm going in blind.
Yeah, it was. I think it's an Audible original audiobook, so I'm pretty sure that they probably don't allow it to be distributed onto other platforms.
But in German, it's okay.
They had it in German. They had it in Swedish. They had
it's a translated version. It's not the like the official version of it, which is in and of itself like insanely popular. I know it's weird. Eh?
All right.
I thought about listening to the French version, but by that time I just couldn't be arsed anymore.
It wouldn't have been the same.
No.
It is not the same.
No. I don't think the jokes would land in the same way. That always happens with translations, you know? You just, like, you're there, you're like, I'm sure. Even when you watch a film, like, foreign film, and you can catch funny bits, but you're like, I'm sure that these translations don't quite land the way that they would if you heard them in their original language and understood them, you know?
Yeah, there's, like, a cultural thing sometimes.
Oh,
right?
Definitely.
But you're like, I don't think I caught that. Yeah.
No. No, it makes
I mean, anyways, that's still good because I read it a long time ago. Megan listened to it recently.
Very recently.
You didn't. You went blind, so
we've got all three
different perspectives here.
It's perfect.
It's good. I don't think anybody is particularly surprised to hear that this is an insanely huge and popular release. I think Andy Weir at this point actually does draw a crowd because of something like The Martian. This had like a pretty big like production team behind it. Obviously Ryan Gosling stars, so that's a big draw already for people. He also produced the film. Andy Weir produced the film as well. It was directed by Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, who are like a filmmaking duo essentially, who have worked on things like Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, the Lego Movie, the 21 Jump Street and 22 Jump Street, like the newer movies there with Channing Tatum.
Yeah, that really translates here.
Yeah. Yeah. They also, I believe, have written and not directed, but written and produced the Spider-Verse films, the animated movies that are very popular right now as well. And the screenplay for this was written by Drew Goddard, who also wrote the screenplay for The Martian, as well as having written screenplays for a fair few other projects and directing Cabin in the Woods. Heyo.
He did so many.
I know. He's done a lot.
His name because he's written for so many big movies.
Yeah. He's a big one. He's pretty up there. Yeah, what am I looking at? He used to write for Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel. He wrote Cloverfield, World War Z, The Martian. 2011, he directed Cabin in the Woods. He created the Netflix Daredevil TV series.
Like a lot.
I know.
Yeah, but it's interesting. Like now that you're saying all this, like who was involved in the movie, I definitely saw. Like now that you're saying it, I'm like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Like the tone, the acting, like the style. It all tracks within this movie, I think.
Yeah. No, it definitely does. I guess before we get into the bigger spoilery-ish bits of things for people who like haven't seen it and stuff like that, before we get into that part, do we want to talk about everybody's just sort of first reactions to this, first feelings about things?
Oh, big feelings. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, somebody go. Somebody go.
Catherine, you go.
Okay. So I went in blind. Like I knew that it was a sci-fi movie, obviously. What I will say is that I was having to pitch this to mom because she was coming with me to see the movie. Right. And she's like, oh no, sci-fi. She's like, what is this about? I'm like, well, if you don't come, then I'm going by myself, basically. So that's fine. So I have some background knowledge that it was like, I think there was some sort of post-apocalyptic event that happened or something. Mm-hmm. And then this guy is like our last chance on Earth kind of to like save the world. Like that was kind of what I derived from the very... Like, I hadn't even seen the trailer for this thing because I don't like watching trailers for movies before I go in because I find that now trailers just give away way too much of the movie.
They give everything.
Yeah, some of them really do.
Yeah. And I knew that there was something about a rock, but I didn't know what he looked like anything like that. So I'm just like, it's a dude in space. I think it's kind of like Castaway because there's a rock legs.
Except the rock is not a non-sentient volleyball.
Yeah. Whatever. So all that to say, like I watched it. I really enjoyed it. Like I just like Ryan Gosling. You can just tell he's having such a good time whenever you're watching one of his movies.
Yeah.
And then that makes me feel like I'm having a good time too. But I also really enjoyed the other characters, especially the woman, like the project director or whatever her role was.
What's her name there?
Eva Stratt the character's name. Yeah, we'll have to talk about her a little bit more on the spoilery bits. Differences in certain things of characterizations between the book and in the film.
And stuff
and sort of like the kind of differences like that, because that's a character that I find is fascinating in the book. So I'm curious to kind of talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah. But I enjoyed the levity of like how they kind of tried to make it a little bit more family friendly and whatnot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about you guys?
Arthur?
I liked it. I was trying to remember a bit what happened in the book.
Let's joke you there.
Yeah, you did a bit.
But we did listen to, I listened part of it when we were driving around and stuff to it. So kind of brought me back some good memories. I did like it a lot. I feel like it was too condensed, but it's also a movie that is already 2.5 hours, so it's kind of hard to keep it going. And they're not going to make it into a TV show. That's not good enough.
Unfortunately, no.
You know? So, like, I think they did kind of, like, what they could with it without giving too much kind of, like, of the science background and stuff. And
yeah, they tried to,
they removed some things that I think should have been there. Like, agreed. We were talking with Dan about it on the way back when they nuked the ice caps to warm up the earth because it was getting too cold because, you know, the sun is dying.
Yeah, he was telling me about that.
Yeah, that's it. So, like, that's in the book.
Yeah, we need to talk about some of that.
I thought would have been hilarious and also insane to include. You know, but overall, I think it was great. You know, it had the right beats and the moments of, like, emotional moments, I guess, that were important to be had. No, I liked it a lot. Yeah, maybe it was, you know, in certain cases, it was kind of, like, a little bit too silly, but not the end of the world.
Yeah. I did enjoy it overall. Like, I found it was as much as they could make it into like a really solid adaptation of something that it's very science heavy, and there are quite a few story beats that happen throughout the course of the book, so it would be very difficult to keep everything in. I'm inclined to agree. I found overall it was really enjoyable. But I did find, unfortunately, that the removal of certain things did take away from some of the relationships, even I will say like the central relationship of the story to a degree. And there were maybe certain aspects that were a little bit too stripped back to maybe make it too family friendly. So it leaned a little bit more into the happy and silly side of things than maybe focusing on some of the gravity of the situation that everything had found itself in. I was surprised that even a lot of the scenes that take place on Earth, and I won't say more than that right now because we're not in spoilers, but isn't like they weren't as serious as I thought they were going to be. So I was a little bit surprised by that.
And that was the comment that I actually made to my mom, like, as we were leaving the theater. I was like, I have read enough. Like, I'm not a science fiction buff, but I've read enough science fiction to kind of make an educated assumption that probably the book was a lot more serious than the movie. There was probably a lot more details about the science behind everything. And, like, I have a question for the two of you who have read the book that I want to verify. You know, as I said to her, like, you could tell that they were really pushing, like, the family friendliness of this one.
Yeah.
Because, like, if you watch other movies like Interstellar, for example, or, like, The Martian and that one, like, there's, like, a lot of heaviness in the story. And I do believe that science fiction, because there's been so many of those types of adaptations, that now there's, like, almost like a bias in that direction with a lot of sci-fi. And so maybe what they're trying to do with this one is try and, like, to bring in the masses a little bit more with it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's exactly it.
Oh, I agree. I think it was to open this up to as wide of an audience as possible. That was probably the main sort of purpose of it, essentially.
Yeah, almost unfortunately. I mean, I understand.
Yeah, I get it. But also you're like, oh, well.
I mean, there is ways to include it in the movies, but whatever.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think there maybe could have been certain things that they could have tweaked, just maybe one or two instances of things, and focused on maybe some of the what felt like the actual gravity of the situation.
Yeah.
Like, I also found that the relationship between Strat and Grace was not developed enough. Like, we get it. It was just enough to understand that they had some kind of, like, you know, trust and involvement with each other. Yes, definitely. Nothing more than that. No. If you miss 5 seconds of the relationship scenes, you wouldn't know.
You'd be like, oh, are you guys like decent friends? Oh, okay, I didn't realize kind of thing. Like, you wouldn't have really known. And there's more. Anyway, we need to get into the spoilery stuff because there's more complication, I find, to it in terms of, like, the nuance of their working relationship and kind of their friendship to a degree in the book as well. There's more to it with that. So
okay, do the spoiler thing so right. We can talk about it.
Okay, we're getting into spoilers, everybody.
Be-doo, be-doo, be-doo.
Spoilers. So as a background, that's it. In terms of current rankings and where we're standing with things at the moment, the film has an 8.5 out of 10 on IMDb. Critic score on Rotten Tomatoes is 95%. Wow. Audience score is 96%. So wow. I think the comment, Shireen, that you just made about the masses and about drawing people in, this is exactly what this type of writing for this type of film has done. It's just so easily digestible that it doesn't feel like it's above anyone's heads. It feels like it's easy for them to follow, and that there are people in multiple age ranges who can have the same level of enjoyment with it, basically. And people who don't know anything about this type of subject matter or don't really care about it particularly can follow it and enjoy it for other reasons outside of the space, outside of the science.
That's what I was just about to say, is that they injected just enough of the sci-fi details that if you were interested in that side of things and you wanted to pay attention to that, you could. But if you were feeling like, oh my God, this is over my head, it didn't really matter because the story was still kind of still moving forward and you were still able to go along for the ride.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. So very basic plot obviously follows a character named Dr. Ryland Grace, who wakes up on a spaceship, which turns out is called the Hail Mary. He doesn't know who he is at first or why exactly he's there. He's been in an induced coma for, I think it's 4 years, if I'm not mistaken, is the length of time that they said it was to get there.
I thought it was so much longer than this.
No, in the movie, they said it's 4 years. Okay, so it's 4 years, but the time, whatever their disparity on Earth is 11 years on Earth has gone by, but 4 years has gone by for him.
Okay, because that's where I wasn't sure. Because there was like the 11-year thing. So I'm like, so he's been in a coma for 11 years? No, but then at the end, they're like, you know, return to Earth 4 years. I'm like, was he closer to Earth?
No, that's it. See, these are the little bits of bobs that are more difficult to understand.
This is the whole
time dilation, right?
Time dilation, you're traveling to the speed of light almost, because they said that Tau Ceti is 11 light years away.
Yes.
Which would take you 11 light years to travel there if they're traveling close to the speed of light. Mm-hmm. But then the person would only experience 4 years.
Right.
Because of
the time dilation difference, whatever basically, that it creates. Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. That's it. But meanwhile, that's it. That's the whole thing, right? Is that it's, let's say, 4 years and 4 years in general. So again, same thing, sending back the information to Earth with how to fix this, because basically these astrophage things that have appeared on the sun and are slowly but surely eating away at the sun and cooling the sun, which in turn, of course, is cooling or dimming the sun, I should say, which in turn is cooling the Earth, which of course, over the course of roughly 30 odd years will cause essentially an ice age. Basically crops will die. There will be widespread famine. There will be all kinds of problems that will eventually lead to a mass extinction event, is pretty much like what the expectation is. So again, I never find you feel the gravity of that very much during the movie, but when you're reading, like I was listening to the audiobook and I was like,
well, they said in 30 years, only half the planet.
Yeah, I know. But it's like a one fucking line in the movie. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah, and I think, you know what I kept thinking about, like, when they said that, like, so at the beginning when he's in his classroom and then one of the kids asks the questions, like, you see, like, the severity of it on his face, but it's more of, like, I just don't feel like talking about this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then, and again, because I went in blind, and then they kind of bring it back again. I'm like, I feel like as an audience, we've almost been a little bit too conditioned to this type of plot in a movie because of like Avengers Endgame and stuff, you know, like where like half the population dies and they come back, you know? So it's like,
this wouldn't be a comeback.
This
situation
is not that kind of movie.
No, it's true. It does kind of have that superhero polish over it a little bit, doesn't it? That blockbustery vibe, sort of.
It's, you know,
I know.
Good art and people who.
Yeah, I know people who have done like a lot of that type of stuff. So maybe that's why, to a degree, plus the budget, plus everything, right? And the budget was somewhere around like I think it was $248 million.
Yeah, I think it was
$250 million.
Yeah, and I think it's tracing. Last number I made read was for $80 million.
About $80 million for opening weekend.
They're projecting $50 million, so
wow,
it's doing really well.
That's pretty good.
Damn. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's it. So because of this, of course, obviously Earth is trying to develop anything that they possibly can to figure out how to fix this astrophage situation. That's what they call these little microbes. And they realize that, that's it, about 11 light years away, there is another star called Tau Ceti that exists in a totally different solar system, basically, and is the only one also in its region that's not being infected by the astrophage, even though all the other stars in its area are experiencing the same problem. And so, of course, the point is to journey to Tau Ceti, study, collect whatever information they can and findings, send those back to Earth so that then in turn a solution can be found to get rid of the astrophage or contain it or do whatever it is that they need to do. But in doing so and creating an interstellar ship and the the technology that exists and can exist in a short period of time that they need, this is a one-way trip. There would never be enough fuel to be stored in order to get anyone, and food, like all of it, to be able to get anyone home after they have completed their findings. So it's a Hail Mary mission. It's a one-way trip. That's like the point, basically. And unfortunately, when Grace wakes up, he realizes that the other two members of his crew who had gone with him unfortunately passed away in transit and did not make it through the journey. So he is by himself.
So this is the thing that I wanted to ask the two of you, because you've read the book. So what irked me was that we got the story of, now I know we haven't talked about Rocky yet, but we've said spoiler alerts. We got the story of why Rocky's crew died. Like, yes, he figured that out. But we never got the conclusion as to why the crew on the Hail Mary died.
There's no complete conclusion in the book either. There's no clear way to know. His best guess is that maybe there was either an infection that set in or something that occurred while they were in the coma. And the Mary bot there that they've got that takes care of them, that system, it can do a lot. But it in the book too, like there, this is basically new technology that's being built to act as like a physician almost, but it's just not the same thing as having a professional person on board monitoring everything. So there's no way, he never knows for sure what actually happened to them. Like, there is no concrete answer.
Oh, okay. That's too bad. Cause I was like, at the end I was like, is it cause he ended up in a coma before them? Like, what was it? You know?
No, not even necessarily. I mean, who knows? Maybe that could have had something to do with it, but as far as we're aware, no.
That's a good question.
Yeah, because even in the book, there's an entire plot line about the fact that they have to test people who are volunteering to go on the mission. They have to test them because there's a very specific thing
DNA.
With this DNA profile that matches like being able to withstand being put in this sort of induced coma for a number of years.
It's super long.
Yeah, because a lot of people, the human body can't resist that. You would die. And so the people who are sent up there, Grace included, match that profile. However, there is no 100% guarantee that they're going to make it, right? Like, it's
there's other factors that come in.
Yeah. It's best guess, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway. So that's basically what happens. Of course, he manages to arrive. He's kind of, and he gets, every time you get a flashback back, it is him in that basically moment remembering what happened and getting flashes of memory. And they don't explain it very much in the book. It's glossed over it's glossed over a tiny bit. In the book, we'll talk about it, but there's a more of a reason that it takes him so long to remember. Like, yeah, the coma to a degree would affect it, but not as much as you think it would.
Okay. Got it.
When he's there, what happens? He realizes when he arrives at Tau Ceti that there's something else on this thing called the Petrova line, which is what they've been looking for. And he's like, what the fuck is that? And then, of course, it turns out it's another spaceship from an alien race. And he's like, oh, no. Which also in the book, totally fucking different. It's there. That is exactly what happens. But he's so excited. He's like,
is he really?
Oh, my God. He's like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. There's an alien spaceship. Holy shit. And there's this whole thing because they've got the spaceship that Rocky's people, he calls them Meridians, that they have. They've got this robot arm outside that can like fling around and like do stuff and repair outsides of the ships. There's an entire scene in the book where when the blip A, they call it, starts sending him
stuff
for him to look at to understand, like, the little models that are being made for him, and he doesn't know what they're doing. He catches it at one point. He goes out in the suit. He catches it. He waves, and the robot arm waves back at him. It's like, what the fuck? This is so cute. But all of this leads to basically the much larger alien spaceship, like, latches onto his, and through the brilliance of the unfortunately only one alien still remaining as part of that crew from the other planet, is able to decipher, because this character is an engineer essentially, and it's able to decipher what it is that he needs to be able to see through, like, the whole wall at the beginning. Yeah. It's all different materials, because it's like, I don't know, what's your thing? Like, do you see, do you feel, do you hear? Like, what's your situation? So when he touches the one, like, little, like, hexagon in there that's, like, clear, that's basically looks like glass, that's why the alien is like, aha, okay, you get back in there. I'm going to build a whole wall of this. Here you go.
Okay, because that was not, like, at all. No, you know, in the movie, I'm like, what is going on here? Because he goes up and he looks through, and then Rocky's got his little, like, model there where he's, like, showing him going back into the ship. And he's like, okay, you want me to go back into my ship? Okay,
I did appreciate his little thing where he's like, but I just got here.
I know. It was so cute, you know? It was really cute the way that they did it. I didn't understand that. So that makes more sense now. And also when he says to Rocky, like, oh, your whole thing is, like, echolocation. Like, he figures that out with the clock. I'm like, how did you figure that out? Like, there's nothing...
There's a whole thought process to it, because Rocky also shows him his clock. I think he might do it before as well, if I'm not mistaken, like, show it to him. And then he realizes that it's more to do with, like, the, like, there being textures on things. And he's like, oh, okay, this is a thing, or, like, the sound has to bounce off of it. So he realizes that he needs, like, something like a full shape. He can't just look. That's why the tape measure doesn't work, because it's flat surface with numbers on it. He can't see the numbers, so he can't read the numbers, so he doesn't know what the tape measure is or what it's for.
Oh, okay. This is clearing up a lot of questions I had while I was watching.
There's one thing that really irked me around that scene, is that when he first gets the object, he's, like, just touching it.
I know. I'm like, that would never happen.
No scientist would ever do that. And
open
then,
an alien space object and just be like, I'm sure this is going to kill me.
That's it. Like, okay, fine. He said he checked it. It was xenon, which is whatever, not really a terrible gas
but
you.
It's a gas that's been made into a solid. Yeah, which in and of itself, what does that mean?
Whatever, that's right. Fine. You wouldn't touch it. Opens it. Well, no, but no, then he opens it.
You would not.
And then when he says that, you know, like, oh, like, you can take off your helmet because I made you atmosphere, there is like, oh, I don't know, I'm the only human who's gonna save
you. Just
Earth.
Open,
like,
that fucking container, my guy. I think you're good. I think you can take off your helmet. I think you're fine.
Those things were kind of a little bit annoying.
In fairness, in the movie, he, like, opens it and then he sniffs it and he's like, oh shit, like, what am I doing, kind of thing. But dude, come on.
No one would ever. Do it in the container where he did it with the gloves.
With the
and
gloves,
everything.
Exactly. You'd put it in there and then you would open it and figure it out.
Also,
and
because the way he reacted is because Rocky's atmosphere, which I don't think they mentioned, is ammonia.
Largely ammonia. So that's what they breathe.
It's very, very hot ammonia. So
it's
that's
very
why it
hot. So that's why, like, you know, when he drops something into the drawer, he's like, oh, Jesus, it's hot. It's fucking hot in their atmosphere. Like, it's unsustainable for a human being. It wouldn't be possible. Yeah. It's super hot. And they basically breathe ammonia.
Right.
So there are a couple of times in the book where he gets hit with, like, a smack of it in the face, and he's like, he can't breathe properly. His eyes are watering. Like, it's really, really bad. So
that's what it is like to have cats.
Yeah, when you have to clean the litter box.
You don't fuck with cats, people.
So of course, once they're able to, both of them cleverly learn to communicate with one another. And because that's it, Rocky is what's called an Iridian, because his planet's name is Iridian 1440 or
something like
Iridian
that.
40?
I mean, that's how we named it. So.
Yeah, so he calls it Arid anyway, the planet. And so the planet's very different. So they're basically, that's it. It's like a rock-like creature with five arms. It basically looks kind of like a rock spider, sort of. And they have to figure out a way
and
to
communicate. And he's also very heavy.
He's very heavy.
Which
they
don't say in the movie, he's like 400 pounds or something.
Yeah, like,
oh, wow.
Pounds. Like, in our gravity, in our atmosphere, he's like over 300 pounds. He's very, very hard to lift. He's very dense. And so, of course, because they have no language, that's the same. But Iridians don't have things like computers. That's not a thing for them. So he, Grace, is able to develop like a system because they basically communicate in like musical tones almost. And each of the tones means something different.
They sing to each other.
Yeah, they basically do.
I try to do that to you. You hate it.
No, I don't. So I don't. It doesn't sound the same.
Wow.
They're able to communicate.
Did you sing her name like he does with his mate?
Yeah, I go like this.
It was so cute. So obviously once they start being able to communicate, there's an entire buildup of everything, in terms of them figuring out, like, okay, you're here for the same reason. Your son is also dying. And so you've been sent here to also find a solution. Now, unfortunately, Rocky's original crew was 23 Iridians, which when I heard that in the book, I was like, oh my God, that's so sad.
Yeah.
And they all died also in transit. And he did not know why, but that's a whole explanation too, because Arid's atmosphere is so, 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 so incredibly dense. There's no radiation that gets through. We as humans have built up a natural defense to like the radiation from the sun.
Well, the small amount that gets
the very small amount. Yeah, exactly. They don't have that at all. They have no defense for it. So unfortunately, like the astrophage itself protected Rocky because he was the ship's engineer and he slept right next to the fuel bays where all of the astrophage is stored. But because his crew did not do so, unfortunately, they all succumbed to radiation poisoning, which is really sad.
I know. And then there's like the whole thing in the movie about how like Rocky has to watch Grace sleep because he's like, because if I don't watch you, then who's going to make sure you're not dead, you know?
Yeah, because that seems to be a natural thing for them. When they sleep, they're like paralyzed.
Yeah.
And they sleep for like a weirdly long amount of time compared to us anyway. And when they do, I guess there is possibility that you can't move, you can't be woken up. So it means that like predators and things could kill you. So over centuries and millennia and stuff, they've developed the system where they watch each other sleep. Like it's just a normal thing to do. They don't sleep at the same time. They watch each other sleep, or at least have one person watching. So it's like a standard thing for him. So yeah, there's all kinds of sad things like that. Cause you're like, oh God, the whole crew died. And then there was nobody to watch him sleep this whole rest of this time. Do you know how long in the book it has been since he left Arid?
No.
46 years.
Oh, wow. So Arid is a lot further away then from this star.
From Tau Ceti, I think it is further away for them. And also because he had to try to take care of the crew by himself and do everything and repair the ship when it needed it and stuff. And the whole thing with them too is that Iridians have never done any sort of space exploration. This was the first time, and only because there was a problem that they decided to go looking for it. So they built a ship. They had to do all of this stuff that they'd never done before.
Yeah, the only thing they had is they had a space elevator.
Yes.
So they had like a base around their planet, but it was just an elevator.
Yeah.
So they never went off planet, essentially.
No.
So there was an Iridian Willy Wonka, is what you're saying?
Yes.
Kinda.
With the big glass elevator to space.
So cute. So you know, obviously they form a lovely little friendship and decide that they're going to work together to try and save both of their planets, of course, and figure out like what has happened. So obviously everything that ensues is very much in that vein of them trying to like find a solution for everything. And at the same time, we are treated to more and more information and given more context as to like how Grace went from sort of disgraced molecular biologist / middle school science teacher to, you know, almost like secondhand
guy who saves the world.
Yeah, that's it. Like, you know, sort of like secondhand, right hand on this project, of course. And then from there to one of the members of the crew, which is good because it was good because I know the marketing campaign gave away like all the Rocky stuff and everything, but there are enough surprises throughout the rest of the story that it, you know, you had kind of things to be surprised about, right? Yeah. Like you go in assuming he chose to be there. You do.
Oh, definitely. That was the one thing like that was kind of, I was like, oh, he doesn't know why he's here. And then I'm like, he probably just like probably some amnesia from like being in a coma for too long or whatnot. But then I realized like the fact that they were showing the backstory like in detail, I'm like, hang on a minute, what happened here? How did he end up on this ship, you know?
Because he was never supposed to be the person who was there. So
yeah,
there were other crew members. Unfortunately, there was an experiment with the astrophage that went wrong. They died. And so they needed a backup in a very short period of time. But Grace is, again, he's somebody who, that's the whole characterization in the book too, is that he he'd written a dissertation that was widely panned, basically, and criticized, and he didn't take it well, and he decided to basically leave the scientific community and find a way for people to love him. And so obviously, becoming a teacher, you have a little bit of a hero complex sometimes. You know, he's a good science teacher, the kids really look up to him, nobody can hurt him in this little space, in this little world that he's created for himself. But now being thrust into the idea of having to, in a very short period of time, choose to give up your life. I think we'd all like to think like, yeah, no, I would definitely do it. I would like, you know, I would definitely do that. You don't know what you would do in that situation.
I appreciated that angle that they were showing in the movie. Like, cause I kind of assumed that something must have happened to the crew. And then he was like, last minute, like, you gotta go, you know, but I did appreciate that they showed that side of like, hey, not everyone's that much of a hero and like ready to just kind of be like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to space in a coma for like 10 years and then I'm going to save the world. But I actually don't know if I'm going to save the world and I'm going to die while I do it. And I know that for sure. Like, not everybody's going to be like, yeah, sign me up.
Exactly. Like non-optionally. Oh no, I know I'm going to die. So
yeah,
there's no coming back. Yeah. I don't know. I think we'd all like to feel like we'd be a particular way in that situation, but you just don't necessarily know. So
I'm definitely doing it. Okay. I already signed the papers.
Okay, good to know.
Wow. She doesn't even care.
What am I supposed to say about? We don't have astrophage, luckily. Good for us.
Yet.
Wow. Very optimistic there.
Oh, seriously. yeah, so he does opt out. However, the sort of head of the entire project, her name's Eva Stratt. It turns out she's one with like a really weirdly mysterious past in the book. You don't really know too much about her, but she's basically given access to every single resource on Earth possible and has access to every single level of government and any security clearance she would ever need in her entire life to make this project happen. And particularly in the book, that is exactly what she does. She's
the president of the world.
And pretty much, okay. Yeah. She basically outranks world leaders.
Yeah.
Okay, we need to talk about this character though. Like just that information that you gave, like, it's so interesting that Andy Weir chose this to be a woman, first of all, running this project, because we know, based on our society and based on like how things typically go, you wouldn't always pick a woman for something like this. Yep. Now, we also know that when everything's going to shit, they tend to pick women because they're like, hey, the status quo doesn't work, so let's give it to a woman and see if that works. But, like, I think if everyone's life is at stake forever and ever and ever, they, you know, like, it was just really interesting to me to see, okay, so it's a woman who's heading this, first of all, which, you know, great. You just said they essentially gave her all the power in the world to get this done. Now, imagine if they had picked the wrong person to do this. Mm-hmm. Like, what? The movie would have just turned into freaking Mad Max instead of like Project Hail Mary. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, basically. Honestly, this character, I loved this character in the book in particular. I thought she was incredible because this is a woman who has like, she's much, how do I even put it? She's much more serious in the book. Like you do see some empathy from her to a degree, but it is so much more repressed than in the film. And you can tell that they probably changed the characterization slightly because all of the whole woman-hating quotient of the planet would have been like, what a fucking bitch. And that would have been all they had to say about the character. But in the book itself, basically she is one, the way that she is described, the way that she reacts to things, the way that she deals with things. If she were a man, everybody would be like, strong leadership. But everybody is kind of like, what the fuck with how like cold she is about things. But her entire thought process is, if I do not do this, if we do not fix this, half of the planet will be dead in 30 years.
She's very pragmatic.
Get
shit done, man. That's it.
Exactly. But it is. It's that much more interesting to have a woman in that role. It adds a nuance that you don't often see in a lot of other things. And I loved the character in the book. I thought she was fantastic. I liked Sandra Hüller's portrayal of her in the film. And like I said, I can understand why they toned down a little bit of it in throughout the course of the movie. You can see it, like, she's a little standoffish, but it's nowhere near what you get from her in the book. Like, to the degree that when things blow up in the book and the, unfortunately, the science officers are both killed in the explosion prior to the launch, Grace has a bit of like a tearful breakdown because he's been working with these people for months and he considers them friends. Basically, he's like, oh my God, they're gone. I can't believe this. She slaps him in the face and tells him to get over it and find her backup science officers because she's like, we don't have fucking time for this.
But like, you'd have to be like that in this situation. Like, this is the person you want leading a mission like this. You don't want somebody who has any time for anything other than I gotta save the fucking planet, you know?
Exactly. She is literally the perfect choice to run this entire mission the entire way through. And it's clear. And then it's even clearer later when Grace refuses to go on the mission and says that he's opting out. And she basically says to him, she basically makes it clear in the book as well. She's like, listen, you were always the third option. You have been here for every single meeting, every decision that was made, everything that has happened. You were here for all of it. You were always the tertiary crew science officer for a crew, and you just didn't know it, and I'm sorry, but this is not an I can take no for an answer kind of situation. I cannot. So he is, that's it, put into a forcibly induced coma a number of days prior to the launch, and the crew is lied to because the commander, his name is Yao, the commander of the mission, who's actually also quite a bit more serious in the book, is very much like, I will not take people with me who don't 100% want to be here. That's morally corrupt, and I don't agree with that. So I believe that they're lied to, the two that go with him, and told that, like, it partially because of nerves and partially because he's not an experienced astronaut, this is to help him. They induced the coma a number of days early, but also he's given this oddly experimental drug, and I can't remember where it's from, that it leads to partial memory loss. So her entire theory is basically, I'm going to do this. You're going to get this drug. You're going to be induced into the coma. And then even after you wake up, it will take a while for you to regain your memories. And I believe that by the time you realize what's happened, you'll be so invested in this that you'll probably just continue with the mission anyway.
And she was right.
Yeah.
I mean, like, what's he going to do? Throw, like, a rage fit and be like, no, I'm not doing this. It's like, bitch, you're already in space. Just get on with it.
Like, I mean, you've already met the fucking rock alien. Like,
yeah, exactly. What are you going to do? Desert Rocky? Like, you can't do that.
No, they're best
friends. Yeah, I really appreciated even the way that the actress played the character in the movie, because I get what you're saying. Like, they had to inject a bit more empathy and like
a little bit
more humanity into her, I suppose, like, for the big screen. But that whole interaction, you know, kind of leading up to it, again, I was kind of expecting it to turn into you know, him saying, no, I'm not gonna go, and her just being like, oh, but like, please think of the children, kind of thing, like trying to like happen. But no, you know, when she says like, you were my option kind of thing, and he's like, yeah, I get it, blah blah blah, but then she turns around and says, no, I'm just explaining to you why I'm about to do what I'm gonna do. Like, it was just boom, cold, like, this is it, man, you're going to space. And I was like, ooh, okay. Yeah,
that's pretty much
mad respect, I guess, but at the same time I was like, oh, that must have been hard to do.
Yeah. Weren't they like a week or something, a couple of days before launch? Yeah. Like, so it was crunch time
I think in the book, I think in the movie they said it was insane. It was like 3 days before. That was crazy. In the book, it's like 9 days prior to launch.
Okay, that's it. Exactly.
But it's insanely close to the launch of the ship.
Like, yeah.
There is no time to do anything else. It wouldn't be possible. So that's basically what they need. Yeah, that's it was an interesting, it's a cool dynamic that they've kind of created. And yeah, but they definitely, you know, they do give her more, a little bit more humanity. She has funnier beats as well. Like, she did have some in the book at the beginning when he's first like doing the experiments with the astrophage, and he's like, so am I like expendable and stuff? And she's like, the consensus is that we hope you do not die. Like, we prefer you don't die. She says that in the book. And when he talks about it taking 200 years for bacteria to be discovered, she's like, the consensus here is we would like you to do it faster than that. Like, she's funny. Like, she has funny moments, but it's not as much as you get. There's no like karaoke scene and stuff in the book. Like, you don't get that stuff. So
yeah, that was a bit, to be honest, like, I felt like that was a bit too much, you know, like, when, like, I would have been fine with her being like, yeah, I was part of this, like, choir or, like, whatever, mm-hmm. and I would have been fine with them leaving it at that. Like,
yeah, I know.
We didn't need, like, the Harry Styles, like, rendition, you know, to drive the point home, but...
Like, we know, it's a, yeah, it's a little in your face with, like, the song and what it's talking mm-hmm. about, but, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, obviously, and that's it. The only final really thing is like the relationship between Grace and Rocky that develops, which I loved in the book. I still loved it in the film. I thought it was really sweet and really well done, but I will say that it is a lot goofier than in the book.
Yeah.
They are much more
science-focused, oriented,
and trying to solve problems, yeah. whatever it is. Yeah, of course, there's some funny moments and stuff when he's, like, rolling around in the ball and whatever.
The ball. I loved the ball so much. I was like, oh, I'm so glad they had this.
But they did make it much more funnier so that, I guess, the kids would enjoy it and understand the jokes and stuff.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Because, like, all his stuff when he, you know, when he, like, first gets there and he's just there, like, dirty, 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 dirty. Why is human space so dirty?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and stuff. Like, he doesn't really do any of that. Like, all the, like, a lot of the lines and, like, the types of way that the character speaks are similar, like amaze, amaze, amaze. He says that all the time.
Oh,
like,
does he? Okay.
He said that every and everything whenever he's trying to like emphasize that something is good or bad, he just says it like three times. He's like good, 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 or bad, bad, bad. Like it's really, it's really cute. It's just like a little like thing that he does to emphasize it. But they,
I kind of just realized that if I'm comparing this to The Martian, which I've both seen and read,
yeah,
it is very similar. But it was a little bit, quote-unquote, too science-heavy for the general population, mm-hmm, in a sense.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And here, I feel like they really learned from it and made it, like, funnier.
Yeah,
like
I think, because I think The Martian, like, it did incredibly well, but, like, children weren't really watching it. And it was more serious in tone.
It was,
too. Yeah. It's a lot more bleak, right? Like, he's, Matt Damon's by himself in that film.
Yeah,
he's stuck there the entire time. He goes through his whole process. He, again, they use the same... the same trick of like having him record the findings and stuff. Like he doesn't do any of that in the book, but like they have him like record the findings and stuff, but it's a good way for all of the science aspects of things and the story beats to be transferred for the audience to be seeing what's happening as it's happening, mm-hmm. in like a quicker progression, right? So
yeah. And when I was watching, you know, kind of the beginning of his relationship with Rocky, like when Rocky first gets on the ship, you know, like and dirty, dirty, dirty. And then he's like filling himself and he's like, he can hear me.
Who's and Grace Rocky's talking like, to question? Yeah.
Who's Grace talking to question? Where is Grace question? I'm like, oh my God, it's like having a toddler. Like, you know, because my toddler is a stickler for, you know, keeping things tidy. So, you know, when Rocky was like, dirty, 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 I'm like, oh my God, it's Luna.
That is funny. Yeah, also, one thing, so I will say one thing that I did really, really love. Do we want to do things? Shereen and I started doing this last time, if you want to join in. We started doing our favorites and least favorites. So favorite aspects, so just like overall favorites and overall least favorite aspects of it.
Okay.
Without doing like a number of them, what were your favorite aspects of the film? What were your least favorite aspects?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Who wants to start?
You do it.
I'll do it. Okay.
You stat.
One of my favorite, I will say like maybe up there, my favorite aspects were probably overall, I would say the dialogue, because it was clever and pretty like tightly put together, as well as all of the puppeteering for Rocky. I really liked the way that I love that it was like mostly a practical puppet. It was adorable. It was puppeted by a man named James Ortiz, who they had been looking for voice actors, and he wound up actually being the principal voice actor who voiced the Rocky voice that you get. That's it. They did get Meryl Streep to do a little line when they were searching for the voice, which was
that
funny.
Was so funny. She can do anything.
Yeah. And book Easter egg is that one or two of the other voices that they did, Ray Porter provides the voice, and he famously narrated the audiobook that is incredibly well known and incredibly well regarded. He narrated it. He did an excellent job. The audiobook so good. So they had him do a couple of the little voices that they're playing around with too when he's trying to find a voice for Rocky.
Cute.
Fair enough.
What about least favorites? Or are we doing that after?
No, we can do it. Yeah, we may as well do it all together, right? I think least favorites for me were, I know this sounds crazy, but maybe some of taking away from some of the gravity of the situation that is occurring on Earth. And I know they had to cut a lot of those scenes and I understand it, but I think living in the slightly more serious aspects of things would have added a weight to the film that would have maybe even made it feel even more epic, like when the solution is found and when they're able to help everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think for me that was probably like my least favorite thing.
Well,
yeah,
that's fair.
Yeah,
I don't know. Me was I would say like the least favorite thing is the science aspect of things.
You wanted more, right?
They should have been more things, because the way that he figures, so like the funny aspects of the book come from the fact that at the beginning when they're meeting and they're trying to understand each other, Rocky gives them like, you know, like an atom or whatever, or remember he gives them iron,
yes,
to help him understand something, and Grace is trying to figure out how much it weighs.
What the composition of it is. And then he's like, oh, for fuck's sake, it's iron. I know how much iron weighs. But like, you know.
Rocky gives him all of the information for him to figure it out. But he makes it so complicated that it's almost kind of like stupid in a sense. And that's where the funny beats come from, because they come from the science aspect of things that make it funny. It's not boring.
Yeah.
You know, yes, of course, there's a couple of parts in the book when they're just kind of like going into a page and a half of explaining how
like you don't need all of it,
can absorb all the energy because of XYZ whatever reason. You don't need all of that, but you know, some of those things that didn't have to be like mimically or comically funny,
could
have been smart funny, weren't there, which is kind of sad,
which again, it's like it's a thing, like make it family friendly.
That's kind of like one of the things that I think could have been or should have been better.
What were your favorites?
Seriously, I think the way that it made me visualize everything in my head. So it's like the visuals, obviously, you know, it's a huge production and everything, and the VFX there is insane, whatever. But I think that was very incredible to see it done the way that it is done. I think also like it was pretty scientifically accurate, because when he wrote the book, he has a lot of friends in NASA and whatever it is, and scientists, so he's like super super accurate with his information descriptions, and he takes certain liberties to make, you know, the plot work and whatever. But for the movie, I feel like they also went in that direction and made it, you know, close enough to what it should realistically be.
Yeah.
How it should look, you know, how things should work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Shireen, what about you?
One of the things that I really enjoyed about it, like, I agree with like everything that the two of you said, so I'm not going to rehash like a lot of the stuff, but one of the things that I really enjoyed actually was the like end scene. I don't know if that actually happened in the book. Yeah, it did. Okay, good.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. I was like, oh, yay. Because like when he went back to save Rocky, I'm like, first of all, I was like, fucking yes, go back and save Rocky.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I think because like I had this moment when he realized that Rocky was probably going to die based on what was happening. First of all, side note. There was a leak and he just put it in a plastic bag and he was good to go. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, because the Taumeeba had figured out they'd evolved.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah, they'd evolved in the Xenonite container. So they'd evolved through being able to get through them, but not through plastic. They'd not figured out how to do that shit.
Oh, yet. So, anyway, whatever.
Yes. Yeah,
Whatever. So, like, when he realized that, I was like, oh, shit. Like, is he just going to let Rocky die? Like, is he going to be like, well, man, like, been great, I'm gonna go
back
to
the whole thing, right? And in the book too, because you've now found out that he didn't actually want to be there in the first place, you're like, oh, you'd have to be making that ultimate choice now.
Well, this was it, you know. And he like does his calculation and stuff, and then when he says he's gonna go back and save Rocky, I'm like, yay. But then I was like, is he just gonna die? Like, I guess like that's it for him, kind of. He's going to go and save Rocky and then he's going to die. But then when they did that like last scene and he ends up on the planet there with Rocky, I'm like, oh, yay. And then part of me is like wondering if this is like Andy Weir's like dream almost, you know, like
to live on an alien
in that place, you know.
He might have. That might have been a thing for him to feel like, I'd like to go live on an alien planet. But yeah, no, that is what it is. He winds up. Obviously, because they were so grateful for everything, the Iridian scientists were like, don't you fucking worry. We're going to find a way to make you food. We're going to find a way to make you shelter so that you can stay with us as long as you would like to. Don't even worry about it. It's all good. So they do have that entire process that they go through.
Because technically, if you think about it, they could just make more astrophage as fuel and
which
send
they
them
do.
Back home,
which they are technically doing. Which they had. Well, that's the thing in the book, too. They always had enough fuel. Even if he'd gone back to Arid, they would have been able to make him
fuel to get home.
The food was the biggest problem.
Yeah.
Because they don't eat the same foods.
No.
Turns out Iridian foods are all full of heavy metals, so they would kill you, like, immediately.
I bet.
So it's, like, a whole big thing. But, yes, no, they do. They've made him essentially a biodome with a little environment that he lives in, and he gets to be there with his friend. And he does have a little bit of a moment in the book too, where he's like, maybe I'll go back at some point. Like, I don't know, maybe I'll make that decision. But right now, I don't know. He's pretty happy. And in the book, it's been a while. You can tell in the movie, it had not been very long.
I think in the book, he's like 16 there.
16 years he'd been there.
16?
16 years
he'd been there. Yeah, he's like in his 60s or something.
At the end. Yeah, he's in his 50s when you get to the epilogue. You're like, oh shit, okay.
I mean, like, I just loved it. I'm like, of course this makes sense for him, you know, to be there and stay there. And like, I don't know if he has a class of rocks that he teaches in the book, but
it ends exactly the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A class
of rocks.
I just loved it. I was like, this is awesome, you know? So that part I really, really enjoyed. One of the things I'll point out, I don't know if the two of you agree with me, I find that a lot of like sci-fi movies, because there's such high stakes, they tend to inject like a lot of like kind of stressful situations of like, is he gonna make it, is he not gonna make it. Mm-hmm. I felt like there was only really one in this movie where he, you know, where they go out to collect the predator or whatever, off the other planet. I can't remember the names of anything, but
that's okay.
Yeah, the Talmeba, when they go to collect it, and then he's like stuck, and then it's like, oh, is he gonna make it in, is he not gonna make it in. Like, I get it, like it kind of led to them being injured and like having to have a recovery,
yeah,
but it was like one of the only high stakes danger situations in the movie. And I was really surprised about this because of the number of times that he goes out like on a spacewalk, mm-hmm. like the first time he goes out to Rocky's ship, when he's like playing with all of this, like, you know, weird space matter and stuff. Like, there's only one moment where you're like, oh shit, he's gonna die, and it's that moment. But the rest of the movie, I'm like, I feel like it wasn't high stakes enough.
Yeah, there was a little bit more of it in the book. There were more instances of things that they did not get to, and they did
not.
Well,
the thing
cover.
With the chair, I feel like they didn't emphasize it enough, because, you know, when he was getting like crushed by the chair.
The way it was described in the book, it felt like it was crushing him almost on the floor, like the seat in the thing, you know, where he gets like smashed and Rocky almost dies because he like gets out and hurts himself in the other atmosphere to like pull Grace off of the control.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what was going on there. Yeah.
It was because the gravity, the pressure increased on the gravity, so he couldn't move.
But like in the book, the chair is literally crushing him. He's on the floor. He was
like it was about to break bones.
So that could have been a more high stakes situation, because that's what I remember from the book.
No, it was. It was really severe. Like, he could have died, and like, because that's it. The Mary bot there like gives him a shot and basically intubates him for a number of hours so his body can start to recover. Because it's like, whoa, okay, you're gonna die. Calm down.
Yeah.
And then Rocky also almost dies in that instance as well. He genuinely does, because he's hurt himself. And yeah, there's more of a, I don't know. It does feel more high stakes. That's it. I feel like I don't know. I don't know if it was the family friendly thing that they were aiming for, but I agree with you. It just, again, because of that, because we didn't get as much of the stuff on Earth with like the level of stakes that they were up against and the things that they had to do. I was like, it doesn't have the same impact.
Yeah.
I find. Yeah.
No. And it just felt like a lot of things like just kind of worked a little bit too smoothly. And I get it. Like, they had to get the movie moving. But like, even at the beginning, you know, when he goes and to like Home Depot or whatever with Carl, and they're buying all the duct tape, and then first thing is like, oh no, it's like it's disappeared or something. And it's like, okay, so we're gonna put a box inside another box, and then they just fix it like that. I'm like, this wouldn't work. That's not how science works, people. Like,
I think,
you know.
Be fair, that is very similar to what happens in the book. He does have to like build another box around the box, but people are like less helpful and stuff. There's no Carl in the books, in the book, by the way. True. Like, he's not there. It was a fun character to have, but I was like, because he needed like a friend character to bounce stuff off of, but there is no Carl in the book.
No. And, you know, I have to give a shout out to Ryan Gosling. Like, how many actors can carry an entire blockbuster movie by themselves for like, not 2.5 hours, but like a solid like hour and a half. He was basically by himself in all those scenes. Like,
pretty much,
he did a great job. I also think he did a bit of a Ken dance at one point, like with Rocky.
It's good. He brings a lot of emotional weight to what he's doing. So I think that kind of that helps you to feel more connected to like that character and what he's experiencing, which is important because he's the lead. So anyway, overall it was an enjoyable film. Was it perfect? No. Is it maybe a little overhyped? I'm not gonna lie, like the 95-96% is throwing me off a little bit. It was enjoyable, but I don't know that I would feel that high ranked.
No, it's very good.
Okay,
Sure. I did enjoy it. I did. Yeah, it was a good time. It was a good time.
Yeah. That's pretty much it. Yeah, it was a good time. Yeah. So, hey, wow. There's our first big blockbuster of the year.
There we go.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah, I have no idea what we're doing next week, but we're going to have to figure that.
Oh, shit. Yeah, we do.
But you can, you know, you can stay tuned for all of that over on our socials at fullybooked.ca, and you can always check out the website at fullybooked.ca. We have all of our episodes there, all of the reviews and lists and all kinds of things that you can check out, and our whole backlog of all of our articles as well. So feel free to check that out. But until next week, guys, keep on reading.
Thanks, everyone.
Ciao, guys.